I like marijuana, you like marijuana, we like marijuana too. Hello, welcome to the Medical Freedom Radio Show. This is Heather Martin, and today I am talking with chronic pain patient and patient advocate Robin Michalecki. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on our show. So, I'm very happy to have you here. I'm also very glad that you are a resident of New York State and a pain patient.
Yes, I am. I live in the Adirondack Mountains.
Uh-huh. I have been doing this show for a while. I talk with patients and doctors and activists really around the country. So I'm very glad to get to speak today to another chronic pain patient besides my partner that lives in New York State. I found a lot of people seem, when it's in their own neighborhood, when it's local, to be very reticent about coming forward to talk about the struggle that they encounter as a chronic pain patient, getting treatment and getting medicine and being treated fairly without discrimination in the medical system. So,
yeah, that's proven to be difficult.
Yes, it's proven to be very difficult. Robin, I'd like to allow you a chance to get to introduce yourself and your experience as a chronic pain patient, and what has it been like for you?
Okay, well, I was first officially diagnosed in, it was 1997, and I waited until my son was old enough to get home from school on his own to have my first surgery, which was in 2005. And during my surgery, a chemical was used that was then deemed to be, what they say, the company paid to say that there were no clinical trial, no side effects during the clinical trials. And that has caused unrelenting radiant pain from the surgical site, along with the other issues I have with my spine.
Now, I want to be clear for our listeners. Now, you said you were diagnosed, but what was your diagnosis, if you don't mind my asking?
Degenerative disc disease.
Uh-huh. Yeah, my partner has the same diagnosis, but of course it came from a car accident.
Yeah, mine came from gaining an excessive amount of weight in a very short period of time during my pregnancy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that takes a strain on the body.
Yeah, so I had my surgery. It was on L5-S1.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a fusion with instrumentation where they put in the five pins and two rods. And the defective chemical was actually put into the screws with my own bone to accelerate the fusion.
So that's when this chemical that they were paid to say there was no side effects in the clinical trials was used in your surgery.
Yes, not only that, but it was used off-label. It was only supposed to be used for an anterior approach.
Okay.
And it was used, my surgery was anterior and posterior, which means I was flipped over halfway mm-hmm. through the surgery, and they went in then again through my C-section scar to create the cage because your spine is round.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't just go in just the back. They have to go into the front as well.
Okay. Yeah. So they put this, they did a spinal fusion surgery, and they put a certain chemical into the surgery.
Yes.
And that had these side effects for you, correct?
Yes, I didn't really start experiencing them until about maybe 6 to 8 months after the surgery. And it took them a couple years to determine that it was this chemical. It's not until this it came to light in the news
mm-hmm.
where I was able to ask for my operative reports. And it was then that we saw that chemical was used, and it all made sense from there why I was having pain that nobody could see on any type of testing.
Wow.
the chemical actually seeps into the nerve endings surrounding the surgical site, and there's really no way to see that other than seeing inflammation.
Wow. So
there's no way to really tell what causes it.
Robin, do you think that the surgery you had was otherwise successful other than the complication from the chemical?
Actually, yes. I had it done by a gentleman that teaches that surgery at NYU Medical Center. I mean, at the time, he was the best of the best. Mm-hmm. And to this day, when other medical professionals see my x-rays and my MRIs, they compliment on how beautiful the surgery is.
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot see that, you know, that this seeps out. Now, I'm fortunate because not only did I not want to have more, not only was I told I should not have more children, but I'm also a female, and this chemical actually has much worse side effects in men.
Oh, wow.
Or people that are still wanting to have children. It tends to make you sterile.
Mm.
And in men, it has caused prostate and testicular cancer, which fortunately as a female, I'm not able to get.
Wow.
It has caused bone growths that I had removed before they turned cancerous, but it caused cysts on my ovaries, it caused me to have half my thyroid gland taken out. Mm. I'm currently living with a cyst in my sinus cavity and multiple bone spurs along my spine.
Wow. So you had the surgery to fix your back that was giving you a lot of pain, and because of a chemical that was used in the surgery, you're having all of these other problems and continuing the pain.
Yeah, on top of degenerative disc disease, which now has went from my lumbar, it started in the lumbar area, then it went to the cervical, and now it's starting to show in the thoracic.
Right, so you've already had surgery to correct pain, and that's bringing you more problems. So there's not like a surgical kind of intervention for what you're dealing with now.
Yes, they cannot remove the screws and the chemical that's there. Mm-hmm. And the only way to fix the issues I'm having with my cervical spine is to have yet another cage put in with three discs being fused, and I'm just not willing to have that done.
Mm. I imagine there's a lot of risks associated with that.
Yes, aside from I would lose a lot of range of movement in my neck, you know, it's also, you know, this chance of more complications. I mean, I did not know that this chemical was being used, nor if it was, that it had any side effects until years later. So I'm just not willing to have any objects inserted into my body that I didn't come with.
So what's working best for you in terms of a treatment?
Unfortunately, physical therapy provided very, very minimal relief for a very minimal amount of time. I spent more time in physical therapy than the amount of time I got relief from it.
Uh-huh.
So I pretty much the only thing that has worked has been high-dose opiates, which we know in this climate is an issue. Not only getting them prescribed, but getting your prescriptions actually filled.
Right.
I'm forced to go. It's 4.5 hours each way. Once every month and then twice every other month because I'm in the Compassionate Care Program, which is medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And due to Medicare rules, it cannot be done at the same appointment as my prescription refill.
Wow.
So every other month I have to go to make that trip twice.
That's a lot of expense and travel burden. And how is it for you traveling physically? I mean, is it painful?
Oh, yeah. I have a 2-day recovery period after every trip.
Wow. Yeah.
I just lay in bed for 2 days.
I'm with a chronic pain patient myself, and I know that very well. I mean, even a trip that's only 1 hour is about a 2-day recovery period afterwards. So could certainly understand the struggle that you're going through.
I have to make for my dispensary. It's my dispensary is in Albany, which is an hour south of where I am, and it's the closest one.
Yeah.
But I fortunately just found out at my last visit they do deliver to my area. So next time I need a refill, I just have to call up on a Tuesday, and the upcoming Friday, it'll be delivered to my house free of charge.
You know, Robin, you bring up a very good point, and this is something else that chronic pain sufferers and chronic illness sufferers deal with that's not even being recognized or compensated, is the immense travel burden that is placed on patients, especially those living in rural areas, because when there's no doctor willing to prescribe in your area, it's forcing people who are not physically capable of long distance travel to really have to hurt themselves to go these long distances to get the treatment that they need. So we really have a major problem here in New York State with accessibility of medicine.
Yes, which is amazing. I mean, the doctor I have, he is a saint. I've had other people, I have brought other people to him that call me every month and tell me how I saved their lives because he's compassionate, he cares. He's elderly, which is probably why he's...
And I know we're trying to protect the privacy of your doctor, but I do want to say...
I'm allowed. He's more than happy to take on new patients. If anybody's listening and needs a doctor, he's on Long Island. He has two offices, one in New Hyde Park and one in Syosset. And it's Comprehensive Pain Management. Their paincenter.org is their website. And not the doctor I see, but his partner is one of the founding fathers of the U.S. Pain Foundation. And it's Drs. Weingarten and Feynman. F-Y-M-A-N, if anybody's interested, they can just call and make an appointment.
Weingarten and Feynman.
Feynman. They won't prescribe at the first appointment, but I think that's a New York State thing. But what they will do, if you are willing, is if they will see you twice in 1 month, so you can get prescribed that month that you go in.
Yes. Now, for our listeners who might not know anyone in chronic pain or suffer chronic pain themselves, the situation for people in chronic pain is extremely dire. Doctors who are willing to treat with effective medicine are becoming scarcer and scarcer. For one thing, we are being bombarded with misinformation about medicine. There's doctors out there, supposedly, you know, TV doctors, saying that the pain medicine makes pain worse, that it's not effective. And when you talk to the chronic pain patients who get quality of life from this medicine, you see that these claims are an outright lie.
Yes. For instance, I was on a medicine called gabapentin, which is for nerve pain. And I saw an article come out that somebody OD'd from gabapentin. So I brought that to my doctor, the article, and he showed me, you know, after reading through it, that it wasn't the gabapentin. The gabapentin was in the gentleman's system when he OD'd, but it wasn't what he OD'd from based on the levels of it that were in his blood. He actually OD'd from heroin. So that's a big misinformation right there.
Right. We're dealing with a lot of misinformation when they talk about overdose deaths. For one thing, because we have an opiate prohibition that people cannot access these substances. Whenever we have a prohibition, all throughout our history, prohibitions make the substance more dangerous and create a cash flow for the black market. And we see this right now in this current age of opiate hysteria. I mean, for one thing, let's just say, you know, human nature, people want to get high. People have been getting high on poppy sap since humanity has walked upon this planet. And it's not going to change that people are going to want to do that. What is, in effect, what has been changed by the prohibition is that there's no quality control assurances. There's no standards of measurement. People who are buying substances on the street have really no way of knowing what they're actually getting. They don't know what the dosage is, so... You know, even if they're really knowledgeable and trying to do their best, it's very dangerous because it's illegal. And that's why there's some people who are doing life-saving work, setting up like safe use venues so that people can come in and have clean needles, maybe even access to clean substances. So when you have this prohibition and all this black market stuff going on, these same deaths that are coming from street chemicals, they're being counted as the same as somebody who's overdosing from what a doctor prescribes. And that's really skewing the statistics and providing false information and a false narrative about the severity of the so-called opiate crisis, because it's really a prohibition crisis. You know, during the cannabis prohibition, you had paraquat in every family, a story of someone who had to go to the hospital after smoking a joint, and a whole generation believing that joints were dangerous. In the alcohol prohibition, you had moonshine that could render a person blind in one shot. You know, every time you have a prohibition, you get these toxic concoctions out on the street. And the blame is being really misdirected against doctors and patients, because that is not the problem at all. The problem is that people in chronic pain are having to live without any viable treatment.
Yes, my husband's in IT. He actually runs a web server, and he was, turns out that a lot of these people that have died in the past, I would say 12 months from opiate overdoses, turns out they get them off what's called the dark web,
mm-hmm.
which has become like $1 billion industry. I mean, I don't know if anybody listening is into IT or follows any of mm-hmm. the news, but
familiar
the
with
Silk
that.
Road was taken down,
mm-hmm.
and now there's a few new markets have emerged, and it's quite accessible. You know, if you know how to use the internet and the dark web and the Tor browser, I mean, you can get pretty much anything. And what's killing a lot of the people is substance called carfentanil, which is a derivative of fentanyl. But one little speck of it is deadly.
Right. And it's not even the same substance. When you talk about carfentanil, we're not talking about the sap of the papaver somniferum poppy flower. We're talking about a toxic chemical concoction that imitates an opiate. And it's not,
exactly.
It's just not the same thing. Again, this is this misinformation that we're being bombarded in. So thank you, Robin, for joining us. You're listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM. And this is Heather Martin with Medical Freedom.
I like marijuana, but you like marijuana. We like marijuana too. I want to be a pusher on the Lower East Side for marijuana. I want to be a pusher, got to get you high on marijuana. It's my life and I do what I want.
Hi, welcome back to Medical Freedom with your host, Heather Martin. Today I am speaking with Robin Michalecki, chronic pain patient and patient advocate. Robin was diagnosed with degenerative disc disease and received a surgery wherein a chemical was used that was it had side effects that were not yet being known or publicized, which has caused her extensive complications and continuing chronic pain. So we've been talking about her experience today and how right now the only real effective treatment is the demonized and maligned opiate pain medicine. So, Robin, thank you again for joining us.
You're welcome.
So, now, Robin, you're a resident of New York State, and you're very fortunate to have a doctor who's a member of Doctors of Courage.
Yes.
In fact, I've had many guests on my show who were members of Doctors of Courage. such as Dr. Ronald Myers, Dr. Mark Ibsen, and you're very fortunate to have found one of their members in New York State. And we're very fortunate to have one of their members in New York State, as doctors who really understand pain treatment are becoming a rarity. And for the most part, they're in battle to keep their medical license and to continue practicing.
See, for whatever reason it is, the doctors I see, they are not afraid of the CDC and they're not afraid of the DEA. Maybe it's because they are well into their 70s and they've been a doctor so long that they feel confident in their track record. And even though I am urine tested at every visit, I am never, ever treated like I'm a drug addict. It's even come up where, because I live almost 5 hours away from the doctor, that in bad weather I've been unable to make appointments, and they're very in tune with the fact that I'm dependent on these medications. That does not necessarily mean I'm addicted to them.
Right, that's a common misconception, because people do become dependent on medicine. People who need insulin to manage diabetes are dependent on that insulin. People who are in chronic pain are dependent on their medicine for quality of life, and there is nothing wrong with that.
Yes, and fortunately, my doctor trusts me, because I've been his patient for quite some time, and he trusts his own judgment. A lot of patients are unable to get an opiate with a benzodiazepam, and I'm actually able to do that through him. And not only that, but he also has me on the Medigram, the Compassionate Care Act.
The Medical Marijuana Compassionate Care in New York State.
Yeah. And he actually calls it the quote-unquote trifecta, which I cannot find any other doctor that would be willing to give me an opiate and a benzo, you know, from the same doctor.
Yeah.
But all the things they try to scare you with, all the things that can happen to you, would have happened to me in the past 15 years that I've been on these medications. You know, maybe my doses have changed, but the combination of medications has
not. What did you call that again? The triumvirate?
The trifecta.
The trifecta.
It's a horse racing term.
Yeah. And, you know, actually, those medicines have been traditionally grouped together because they're very effective for helping people.
Well, not only do I have the degenerative disc disease, which has caused stenosis and spondylosis, I also have an anxiety disorder. And it's not severe enough where I need to be medicated 24 hours a day with, you know, an antidepressant. But I can tell when my panic attacks are coming on. So actually, Klonopin is the most effective for me, because I don't need to take it every day, all day. I just can take it as needed.
Yep. Yeah, and it's getting harder for people to get medicines that they take as needed, especially with the opiates, because they want patients to take the same amount all day when people need to have medicine for breakthrough pain, that some days they're going to take a little more, some days they're going to take a little less, and they have to be able to just kind of feel that out.
Yes, actually, I'm on extended release MS Contin, which is morphine sulfate, twice a day at 100 milligrams, which is pretty high, but not after you've been suffering for 20-something years with this condition.
No, not high at all.
And then he gives me oxycodone for breakthrough pain, which that is the drug that everybody's trying to get rid of. It's the instant release 30 milligram oxycodone. And I still get enough of those where I can never expect to have a pain-free day, no matter how much medication I take.
Yeah.
It's not possible, according to my doctors. But I am able to live my life at a pain level of 4, which I've become tolerant to. Where at times, I mean, a 10 doesn't even begin to go near the amount of pain that I'm in.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it all has to do with the weather, what I've done that day, what I've done the day before, the positions that I sit in, lay in. You know, there's like no rhyme or reason to when it's going to just skyrocket for me.
Yeah. And Robin, one of the recurring themes that we find in pain management is accessibility. Like, you yourself have to travel 9 hours to go to one medical appointment, 9 hours on the road when you have a physical condition that makes travel almost unbearable.
Yes, but at least when I show up at the doctor, I'm not afraid that I'm not going to get my medication this month.
Yeah.
You know, that knowledge that I'm just going to go and I'm going to do my usual routine and he's going to do his usual hello, how are you, and check out any new symptoms and then send in my scripts electronically before I even walk out the door. Knowing that I'm not going to have an issue with that is priceless.
And you don't get any kind of transportation help or... financial
help
or anything related to how much you have to travel. Because I know there's some people, probably people who are even listening to the show, thinking, I wouldn't even have the money to do that.
It's about $100 round trip.
Wow.
Gas and tools.
Yeah.
If you don't stop at a rest stop and get McDonald's or, you know.
So for many people, this is completely inaccessible. Here in New York State, we have people who are suffering in pain, many of them who are living on a small disability stipend.
Which is me. I do receive disability, but fortunately, while I was younger, I worked in Manhattan, and then I ended up being a manager of a soft drink factory.
Uh-huh.
So I was fortunate enough to put off disability as long as I possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
And I do bring in a livable amount of money, not if I lived alone, but I live with my almost 23-year-old son who works and my husband who works.
You're very fortunate for that, to have that kind of family support. So many people I talk to who are chronic pain patients are also abandoned by their families because they think, because of the news media and everything saying now anyone who uses pain medicine is an addict, we have a climate where people are turning against their elderly parents, their relatives, their spouses, and many chronic pain patients report losing their family and support networks.
Well,
which is very important.
Don't speak with me because my father is a Vietnam vet and he claims he's in chronic pain in his knees. And he doesn't take any of his medication.
So you've experienced that as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a stigma to it. When I meet new people, I don't tell them I'm in pain management. Just the words pain management set off a trigger.
Yeah, I know. And this is the last thing that people dealing with chronic pain and chronic health issues should have to worry about, is being stigmatized. It's just...
Currently, my only... friends, people that I trust, people that I speak to on the phone on a daily, weekly basis, we're all met on, believe it or not, Facebook in pain groups.
Yeah.
Because I've had friends that like to get high, as you mentioned earlier, and would try to either steal or offer to buy my medication.
Right. And again, because of the prohibition, because they can't just go down to the corner store and get what they want. So it creates a really bad dynamic.
So I've lost quite a few friends over the fact that I will not share my opiates.
Yeah. Well, you certainly shouldn't. They're hard enough to get. You travel 9 hours to go get them. Wow.
But I would lose them if I broke any of the rules of my pain management contract, which that's one of them.
Now, we're talking about accessibility, and you mentioned before even some of the pharmacies have become reticent to fill the prescriptions that qualified doctors are writing.
Now, I live in a town of 17,000 people, which sounds like a lot, but it's really not if you count every human in the town. It includes, you know, children as well. I mean, it's the epitome of rural. It's farm town where I am. I truly believe there are more cows and horses than people. And, I was going to the same pharmacy, a chain, CVS, the 3 years that I lived up here. And it was since 2016, so since this all became a crisis. And I was filling my prescriptions, no problem, every month, same pharmacy, same three pharmacists working at the counter.
Mm-hmm.
I was even increased from 80 milligrams twice a day to, 60 milligrams twice a day to 100 milligrams twice a day. And still refilled my scripts every month, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was back in September that I got my prescription sent in on the 17th of the month. My refill date was at that time was the 23rd. And it was on the morning of the 23rd, a Sunday, that mm-hmm. I called CVS and asked them if they were ready. And at that first moment in time, the pharmacist explained to me that she did not feel comfortable filling my prescriptions.
That's always the phrase they use. I mean, if I had a quarter for every time somebody in healthcare said they don't feel comfortable with this or that. Never mind the patient's comfort level. You've got somebody sitting there with degenerative disc disease and chronic pain, but it's about their comfort. Yeah.
Yes, and I brought it to her attention that she didn't feel uncomfortable when my prescription was increased by 80 milligrams a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, you received my scripts on the 17th. Why didn't you inform me of your uncomfortability at that point?
Yeah.
Why wait till a Sunday when, you know, if she would have told me on the 17th, I subsequently found a new pharmacist and they're fantastic. It's Market 32. So a lot of these rules that are put forth are put through for chains. So anybody with a Price Chopper or Market 32, they're owned by the same company.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to switch your scripts because of your pharmacy, I would suggest you try them first. Because I don't know if they're all the same, but the one by me explained to me that his job as a pharmacist is to fill prescriptions. And as long as the doctor provides what they need to provide mm-hmm. for him to feel that this was okay, that he has no problem filling the scripts. Which the pharmacist CVS explained to me that she spoke to my doctor's office and they provided my diagnosis, which in my contract I allow them to divulge to a pharmacy, mm-hmm. and she wanted more. She wanted to know his plan of action for taking me off of the opiate.
Yeah.
For doing when he was going to start mm-hmm. his taper.
Right. They always ask that question too.
He explained to me that he would start tapering my medication when my pain started tapering itself.
Mm-hmm. Excellent answer. And, wow, you got a good doctor there.
he's a saint. I love this man.
Yeah.
And she pretty much just outright said, no, I'm not filling them. And within the days later, I mean, it took the Market 32 Pharmacy 3 days to get in the morphine that I take because mm-hmm. it's not a common dosage.
Uh-huh.
So he was able to give me my breakthrough meds, you know, that day when my doctor called them in to him. But it did take 3 days for me to get my morphine. So I was pretty sick for a couple of days because the two oxycodone that I can take, you know, on my prescription, I can take up to two at a time, mm-hmm. just it wasn't coming close to the amount of relief that I was getting from the extended-release morphine.
And Robin, unfortunately, what you experienced is not an isolated incident.
I know, and I can't believe that because if the pharmacist that felt uncomfortable with my medication felt that she could treat me better, mm-hmm. then according to my doctor, she should have went to medical school, not pharmacy school.
Yeah, right. And this issue with CVS refusing to fill pain medicine prescriptions has been an ongoing and nationwide issue. In fact, there's been a organized boycott of CVS stores in the chronic pain groups throughout Facebook, throughout the internet. Yeah, we've got pharmacist Steve has been publicizing it on his website. I think.
Yes, I actually posted my story to his mm-hmm. Facebook group.
Yep, it's another person who's kind of like a journalist for the chronic pain community. And so, have you been part of the organized boycott and?
Yes, not only will I not even buy a pack of gum at CVS,
mm-hmm.
but my doctor was so enraged by what had happened.
Yeah.
because since I get the Klonopin as well, if she really felt that uncomfortable, she mm-hmm. felt that she really should have at least filled my Klonopin, because that is often used to assist in withdrawal. And he felt that that would have made the 3 days a lot easier until the new pharmacy was able to get
my morphine. We have pharmacists making medical decisions, overriding doctors in their prescriptions, causing patients to actually go without medicine, as that was your experience. You had to be in pain. You had to be sick for several days because a pharmacist is practicing medicine.
Yes. Mm. Actually, I don't feel she was practicing medicine. I feel that she was pursuing her political beliefs. I feel she was being an activist at her job, which I had called CVS headquarters and spoke to one of their corporate pharmacists. And he explained to me that she was totally within her rights, even though my doctor had provided everything that he was asked for. She's allowed at any moment to just choose she's not comfortable. She actually put the prescriptions through my Part D insurance incorrectly on purpose.
Oh, wow.
Which, I don't know, I thought that showed, I truly believe in my heart of hearts that something transpired in her life during the month between my prescriptions that now caused her to not want to prescribe.
Yeah, but I think that kind of happened to the employees of these stores nationwide, because your experience was definitely not an isolated one, certainly not the first that I've heard of. So, Robin, we're out of time for this segment, so I just want to thank you again for joining us on the Medical Freedom Show and sharing your experience with us. This is Heather Martin, and you're listening to Medical Freedom on WGXC 90.7 FM.
I like marijuana, but you like marijuana. We like marijuana too. I want to be a pusher on the Lower East Side for marijuana. I want to be a pusher, got to get you high on marijuana. It's my life and I do what I want. Marijuana. It's my life and I do what I can't. Marijuana.
Hi, welcome back to Medical Freedom. This is your host, Heather Martin. Today I am talking with Robin Michalecki, chronic pain patient and patient advocate. We've been talking for a little bit about Robin's experiences as a chronic pain patient going through surgery that led to complications. And now she's being maintained on opiate pain medicine, which is currently being demonized by our mainstream media and the war on drugs. So we've been talking about the difficulties in accessing pain medicine, the difficulties in finding a doctor. Robin travels over 9 hours every month to get medical treatment, and she is a New York State resident. Welcome, Robin. Thank you for being on our show.
You're very welcome.
So, let's see, where were we? We were just talking about CVS in the last segment, and it's become a nationwide problem that chronic pain patients who have been customers of CVS are going to get their prescriptions filled and being turned down, being denied, even though they have a doctor's prescription. This has led to a nationwide boycott of CVS stores by chronic pain patients. I know I've been seeing a lot about it in the chronic pain Facebook groups that I'm a member of, and also other websites that are supportive of our cause. Robin, I liked what you said about the last segment, that if she didn't feel comfortable filling the prescription that the doctor wrote, she should have gone to medical school.
Yes, and she could have given me appropriate notification that she had no intention of filling, because I feel that she knew that the local pharmacies did not stock my extended release because of the dosage that it is at. And I feel that she was intentionally trying to cause harm, because she also would not fill my Klonopin prescription, which would have made the withdrawal aches and pains just a little bit easier to take. Due to that, and my doctor was completely enraged when he felt somebody was overriding, not another doctor, but somebody he felt was beneath him in the medical community, was overriding his decision. I mean, he's in his 70s, so he's been a doctor, I would say, 50 years. And he was totally offended, so much so that he has a sign up in his office to this date that says he will not send any patient's prescriptions to any CVS pharmacy in the continental United States. And he has had all his patients switch to other pharmacies. And he said if this was to happen at a different pharmacy, let's say a Walgreens or a Rite Aid or what have you, he said he would then append his sign. And he's not going to take the chance that this happened to another one of his patients, because CVS headquarters said she was completely within her rights to do so. And after hearing that, he said this could happen to any number of my patients at any time, based on CVS's corporate policy.
Wow.
So he himself, and he's got a large practice. It is two locations. You know, he's got to see a couple hundred patients. You know, that's got to say something to CVS, we would hope.
Yeah. We would hope. Certainly, it does seem to be a gross overreach. Now, the name of my show I took from one of the founding fathers of our country was Dr. Benjamin Rush. He was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. And early in this country's history, he was saying, "Hey, you're making this provision for religious freedom. We need a provision for medical freedom." And he was largely ignored, but he predicted that we needed a provision to keep medicine from becoming the domain of really one class, that there would be only one kind of people that could provide medicine, have access to medicine. And he wanted to see it be more of an equal opportunity kind of thing. You know, American freedom, that people should be allowed to go to the kinds of doctors that they want to go to get the kinds of treatments that they want to get, even if it might be out of the box or different or experimental. And because there was no such provision made, well, here we are now.
Yes, and actually, there's a substance that's around now, kratom, that I've actually tried and found to be extremely beneficial, especially if you're somebody who doesn't want to take opiates or your pain level is not quite at that point. But, you know, some states it's like trafficking crystal meth to just possess kratom, which is pretty much a ground up leaf from a plant,
Yes, it's a
which is
tree
part of the
leaf
coffee
from
family.
Indonesia.
And it's part of the coffee family, that plant.
And it is
So,
currently legal in New York
yes.
State. It's available in many of the smoke shops.
Yes, but there is that always fear of adulteration. I order it off a specific vendor, in Georgia. And I've actually become friends with him and his wife and his employees over time. And he's not allowed to put the word kratom in his corporate name, because he has lost many of his merchant accounts. A lot of the credit card processors will have dropped him, where there was a good 6 month period where you placed your order online and then you called and you had to pay over the phone or do COD, or sending a money order takes time. So they decided to accept COD, because then the people can get it. I mean, the guy, it's carolinakratom.biz, if it's okay to say it. It's not only is it a The customer service is phenomenal, but the level of care from the owner, Brian, he posts the lab results of each batch on the website. You can see that it is not, I mean, there have been people that have failed their urine tests at pain management because there were actually traces of codeine in their kratom, and they were unaware.
Hmm. That's interesting.
So Brian is more than happy to post his lab results on his website.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a Facebook group, Kicking It with Carolina Kay.
Uh-huh.
Because they couldn't use kratom in their name because their first Facebook group got taken down by Facebook because of the word kratom.
Yeah.
Which is really disgusting because this is no more dangerous for you than, let's say, ginseng.
Right.
You can get at any herbal or even at corner stores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in some of the Arizona iced tea. I mean, ginseng is everywhere. And kratom is no more dangerous. You cannot OD from kratom.
Well, I think we've gone way overboard with this prohibition culture. For one thing, our country, our municipalities have, you know, you want to talk about drug dependence. They've become dependent on the war on drugs. They've become dependent on the revenues from property seizure related to substances. They've become dependent on maintaining a large prison population. Currently have the highest rate of incarceration of any country in the world. And I think it's any country in the world. I know we're ahead of China right now. But we have way too much incarceration here in the land of the free. And a lot of it has to do with prohibited substances.
Yes, when actually my father-in-law was pretty popular in the AA scene. He had set up a lot of the programs within the New York State prison system to treat alcohol and drug addiction as a disease, not as a crime necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not talking about the dealers. I'm talking about the people that become addicted.
Mm-hmm.
And he set up the DART programs, which is drug and alcohol rehabilitation treatment systems within the jails.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be on good behavior and everything to get into those programs. But they've seen a lot of people get sober and not return to the prison system due to their drug use.
Uh-huh.
And he actually had told me that alcohol is so much worse for the body than marijuana.
It is, of course.
And that he did not understand why marijuana use was prohibited, but alcohol use was not.
Well, none of it should be prohibited.
Unfortunately, he died in the early 90s and didn't get to see medical marijuana become legal in New York, but, you know, that probably would have made him really happy.
Yeah. Yeah, that would.
Because there are benefits from it, which he told me it was hard for him to find a benefit from alcohol, you know, for the body.
But there certainly were a lot of detractors from the prohibition. It made the alcohol problem exponentially worse and certainly would worsen the problems associated with alcohol to prohibit it again. I think there really needs to be kind of a cultural attitude shift toward recognizing personal responsibility.
Yes, because many things are fine in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can drink alcohol in moderation and you don't end up with cirrhosis of the liver and, you know, becoming an alcoholic.
Yeah. And the current ways of kind of addressing any kind of a substance use problem are complete abstinence. They never try to teach people how to moderate, how to be in tune with their own bodies when they're using something, to, you know how to manage, to not take too much, how to drink water to increase your alcohol buzz. You know, I think there should be like a party school, you know, where people just get together and they drink, they smoke pot, they just party, but with some guidance of how to actually do it, how to do it so that you're not sick with a hangover the next day, how to do it so that you're not puking in the driveway, you know, just like practical partying 101. I think there's a great need for that.
I totally agree. You know, maybe Albany be the first school because they consider it a party school too. Institute such a class.
Are you listening, Albany? Got some suggestions for you here.
You know, I grew up on Long Island, and a lot of the kids applied for SUNY Albany just for its reputation.
Mm-hmm.
But that might be the perfect venue to start this class. I mean, I really feel alcohol is a drug. I feel drug use in moderation and with education mm-hmm. would fix a lot of America's problems.
Yeah, it would. Definitely. We turn towards the prohibition before the education as the knee-jerk reaction, and that's a big part of the problem right there. Another thing is that anybody who's using medicines without a doctor's prescription is just by default considered a recreational user, an addict, and all these slurs and bigotry words that I don't need to say. But they don't really ask the people, like, what are you getting out of it? Why do you use it? What does it do for you? And listening to their response.
Yes, like my husband, for instance, you know, we're in our 40s. Mm-hmm. He throws his back out every once in a while. Once in a while. Where he could really use a couple oxycodone
yep.
to alleviate his issue. But no doctor will give him a prescription, you know.
Right.
A backache.
Mm-hmm.
Without extensive tests. I mean, but you could see this man is clearly in pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guide him with Motrin because that has the anti-inflammatory properties and everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there have been, like, after we move from one apartment to another, you know, he's laid up for a couple of days and there's really nothing he can do about it.
Mm-hmm. And there's also people who are suffering from psychological problems who are finding benefits in using them. Remember one time I was at this event where they were kind of memorializing a young man who died from a heroin overdose. And his mother was there talking about how he suffered from chronic depression. The doctors had thrown all kinds of medicines at him, and it would always make him sicker. She said when he was high, he was perfectly normal. And I don't think she realized the implications of what she was saying herself. She was still in heroin killed my son mode. But what about the fact that here's something that actually worked? Here's something that was giving him functionality, that was giving him quality of life. And because he couldn't have his doctor work with him and provide him clean medicine, he had to go out on the street where, again, you don't know what you're getting on the street. There's no quality control. There's no oversight. And he's dead. And
yes, we're back in the olden days. For instance, cocaine was being prescribed as mm-hmm. a pain reliever. You know, I'm talking back in the day.
And Sigmund Freud used it extensively for treating his patients.
Yes, and I'm not a big fan of this man, but I've learned that Hitler... Mm-hmm. was using crystal meth to stay awake during the war.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not overdose. You know, these people that are back in the day that were even using cocaine for pain relief, they did not die of cocaine overdoses.
Right.
Because it was being overseen by a doctor.
Mm-hmm. And that's the best way. You know, people should be able to be open with their doctors about what they're using, why they're using it, and not have to feel like they're at risk of being incarcerated, of having their functional medicine taken away from them, or even being stigmatized. And, you know, that's what we strive for here at the Medical Freedom Radio Show, the Medical Freedom Movement.
Yes, I personally know a young man in his 20s who smokes marijuana every day.
Mm-hmm.
And once I'd asked him why he needs to smoke it every day, and he said it makes him feel normal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes, this gentleman might need to be on an feel the same way if he was on an antidepressant. But the side effects of these medications, it's all for safer.
Yeah.
Like, marijuana is a plant.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you know it's not, you know, as long as you know how it's grown,
yep,
and that it wasn't sprayed with any chemicals, mm-hmm. you know, along the process, you know, that's a clean drug.
Right. And a lot of people who do struggle with mental illness have tried so many different things. They've been to doctors, even if they don't like to talk about it, because it's just such a demoralizing and negative experience. speak.
Yes, and this young man that I mentioned, his parents learned that he had smoked pot when he was about 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they had actually condoned him using it.
Oh. You know,
they wanted to use it in the house, not mm-hmm. outside. We can get in trouble for it. And he knew not to drive shortly after smoking it.
Yep.
But to this day, he's a responsible marijuana mm-hmm. user.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, substances can be used responsibly. So, Robin, thank you again for being on my show. We've got about 2 minutes left. If there's anything else you'd like to share with our listeners, any web links or anything that you'd like to share?
Actually, I would like to tell your listeners that there is a Facebook group out there that I run. It's not really all about being in pain, but it's called PAWS United, PAWS United,
mm-hmm.
and that stands for Pets Against the War on the Sick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Facebook group for chronic pain patients or their families that own pets
mm-hmm.
and feel that their pets help enrich their lives.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lighthearted, fun group where everybody is just supportive of one another. We actually had one of our members have their pet taken away due to their state not knowing its own laws on exotic animals.
Mm-hmm.
And it took us as a community about 2 months, but
yeah.
she has gotten her pet back.
Yeah, I saw that story about the bobcat. That was really heartwarming.
Yep, everybody loves Capone.
Yep.
And I myself had the petition out there, which in less than 2 months had gotten 3,000 signatures.
Wow. Well, thank you, Robin, and I hope you keep up the great work of fighting for chronic pain patients and using pets and levity along the way. That's a winning combination on the internet. So thank you again for being on my show. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
It was a pleasure being on the show. I'm glad I could share my experience with others.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day, Robin.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Be allowed, but heck of my father, the family is mourning. Marijuana. I like marijuana, but you like marijuana. I like marijuana, you like marijuana. I like marijuana, you like marijuana.